Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
All right, he's back from taking a week off or so from COVID and has signed a contract, LA Knight, teaming with John Cena against the Bloodline, Solo Sikoa, and Jimmy Uso at WWE's Fastlane. Well, people who wanted LA Knight to get pushed, they wanted it a couple weeks faster than it happened, but I would think that they would be pretty satisfied with LA Knight being in a tag team with John Cena against the Bloodline. That seems like a high-end push for LA Knight at this point. Travis, what do you think?
If I could start the trend and be the first person on it, LA Knight sucks and he sold out, and how dare he team with John Cena?
There is, you know what? 5 years ago, that would have worked. Cena's cheered by all WWE fans now, even when he's at his most obnoxious and annoying, which, you know, it's hard to compete.
This was more an LA Knight thing about just getting what you wanted and then, you know, turning.
Yeah, fair enough. Totally. Yeah, what do you think? I mean, is this a good use of John Cena and LA Knight when they announced Cena was going to be back for you know, the month of September into October? I didn't really know what they're going to do with him. You know, it wasn't obvious what match was there for him. Cena teaming with LA Knight against Jimmy, who, you know, was back in the Bloodline or trying to be. He's hanging out with him. And Solo seems like a good makeshift patchwork main event that feels big.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if I'd call it, you know, patchwork. I think this was going back to the thing Cena was the special ref, wasn't it, in LA Knight? Yeah, because afterwards he raised his hand and they had that whole moment together.
Yep.
So I believe this was kind of in the works the whole time, and the idea.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know,
Well, they got to get AJ out of there so they could tell the story of Cena being without a partner. So they did the big angle. By Patrick, I just mean, like, you know, 4 months ago, who would have seen Jimmy and Solo against Cena and LA Knight? And, you know, they patched it together with the steps that you laid out there. Yeah. But, you know, to me, it's like, oh, Cena's available. There's a writer's strike. He wants to do something. He wants to go to India. What do we do? And, well, we got this LA Knight guy. You want to work with him? Huh? Let me look into this. What do you know about him? We can put you against Solo. And, well, Roman's off that month. Well, Jimmy come back in the Bloodline. It makes no sense, but we'll tell a story. We'll come up with something. That's what this feels like, but I think it's a good landing place.
Putting it that way, I kind of get what you're saying. Yeah.
Travis, what do you think of LA Knight?
I mean, I like the guy. I've been an LA Knight fan. I can't really legitimately with a straight face say going back to the Eli Drake days, but I do remember a caring about him and only him during that time of Impact. Like, oh, I remember he was in developmental and now he's doing things at Impact. So I'm a fan and have been at least, you know, peripherally for a while. So I'm happy he's getting some spotlight, and even if they, and I'm not even mad that they did the angle or did the storyline with Miz where they drew all the attention to that about him and really made him kind of stand on that. But I'm happy. I feel it's a good booking decision, and those guys together, Cena and LA Knight, could really make LA Knight feel like a big star.
What do you think of the Jimmy Uso storyline and his character and how he's playing? And the announcers are drawing attention to it. You know, he is, you know, he's yanking the mic away from Paul Heyman. Heyman doesn't seem pleased. Jimmy and Solo exchange some looks. They're walking up to the line of tension, not really taking it to a point where you think it has to be resolved. It's just sort of there. What do you think they're – what's Jimmy up to? I mean, he's partaking in these beatdowns. It's not like he's some covert anti-bloodline agent because he's doing too much, you know, nasty stuff for be. Yeah, so – but, you know, some have suggested that. What do you think?
I like his, you know, oblivious, you know, scumbag kind of character. You know, he's – like he's got to know Solo's looking at him side-eye, and I'm like, oh, he's – thumbing this guy right in the trachea, you know, and but he's just like, he's just got that smile on his face and doing his disingenuous, you know, heel shtick, but also like kind of oblivious to Paul Heyman, or whether it's obliviousness or him just not, you know, giving an F. Again, I like it. It's good stuff, and also being a chicken shit on top of that. Where he won't do anything, you know, by himself. But as soon as you get Solo, who he's like looking at to make sure, because again, he knows Solo's like eyeing him sideways sometimes, or most of the time. It's created enough tension, and also got to take into consideration he's different from Jake. Not that they've had to deal with that. They've had distinct personalities for a while now. I mean, ever since they kind of, you know, 2016, 2017, that era where they stopped with the colorful stuff. But it really differentiates them personality-wise. I mean, they're doing they're morality-wise, they're, you know, on the opposite end now. Jay's trying to redeem himself in the eyes of folks that, you know, understandably have a grudge against them, or long-standing grudges, and they're also, you know, turning Drew McIntyre a bit of, you know, off of that, using the Jay stuff and not helping him when he was getting beat down. It's just been all done. And as far as Jimmy goes, yeah, I like the differentiating the twins.
Are you looking at Solo Sikoa now as someone who, let's say Reigns retires in 2 years and becomes a very part-time guy instead of whatever he is now, is Solo like on a path to being a guy you could just imagine WWE building around, or is he just a notch under that? He's got more to prove, or even a couple notches below that, and you think they might be thinking he's going to be a lot more, a lot bigger star than his range so far has been so limited in terms of what he's done, and that they might be overestimating what he can do to break out from that.
I think he's at least a notch under that, maybe a few. I think if they thought, I mean, it's one thing to position a guy as the silent killer, the tough man, the bodyguard, the heavy, the heater, however they present him.
Keep
and
going.
Whatever.
I want six more.
Yeah. whatever, that's not a hard thing to do, but, and to make it legitimate and exciting for, you know, weeks and months on end. But then can he do the next thing? Can he go into being somebody who has to, you know, talk at least sometimes and more than, you know, a sentence at a time off camera, usually, or off mic, usually. I think if they thought he was even a notch under a Roman or a top act, we would have had more of an indication than just kind of the, like, they would have given him personality stuff. He's just the silent guy that protects the bloodline and holds up their interests physically and with violence.
I think part of what he's doing right now is very narrow, but what the narrow range they're asking him to exist in, he's doing better than almost anybody. I mean, like, there is something about telling a story with your body language and your facial expressions. Like, we always use Batista as an example. He was so good at that. Kane with a mask. You could tell his emotions with a mask on. Some people have it, and I think Solo has that. It's not like he's boring. He's intentionally reserved. That does not mean he's going to be compelling and interesting when it's time to do more, but it does mean he's got some skills where he knows it. Even in pro wrestling, you can really communicate a lot through a few words and body language, facial expressions, a little twitch, you know, a little shift of your shoulders. That's hard to teach. So I'm higher on him than you, but he isn't like Roman Reigns, where it's like, we got to figure out a way to make this guy a centerpiece act, which is what everybody thought the second they met him behind the scenes. Same thing with The Rock. We got to figure out a way to make him a big star, to a degree, mm-hmm. Cena too. He doesn't quite, you know, he's not at that level, but there's stuff there, right? I'm interested to see, you know, where we are in a few.
Yeah, it's, for me, it's just, it's all how he's positioned, like what he gets to do. It was just seems like he had more oomph to him when Sammy was around. I don't think Sammy has much to do with, you know, him as a character, as an individual. But I do think he was his best when Sammy was around. And it doesn't correlate necessarily, but, you know, because I like him. I've liked him more at times. I just think it's kind of samey, same old stuff. He hasn't done much or done much more.
I think they're trying to recreate with Jimmy and Solo without being copycats completely the dynamic with Sammy and Solo, but having Jimmy not, obviously Jimmy can't be Sammy. They're very different personalities and different people, but that idea of Solo just sort of observing off to the side or in the background, and you know he's paying attention, you know he's got lots of thoughts, and he just keeps them inside, but you want to study him to figure out what he thinks because he's relevant and seems like an, you know, if not an heir apparent, irrelevant part of how things go with the bloodline. And I really like, you know, Heyman talking in his ear. Like, you can tell Heyman has a level of respect and fear of Solo that he didn't have for the Usos, never had for Sammy in any way. And that's really interesting. And I think that helps put Solo over, the fact that Heyman, this master manipulator, has to manage Solo and knows he can't get away with anything with him. He can't get away with any disrespect. It's an interesting dynamic. I mean, I just wonder if in 2 years we got Heyman managing Solo as a top act headlining PLEs or not, you know, if he fizzles or someone easily leapfrogs him in the meantime. Anyway, Travis, let's pause there. Let's formally introduce the show, and we'll get to our callers and emails and discuss more from the show, including the U.S. title match with Rey Mysterio and Santos Escobar, and we also had Charlotte against Bayley for the first time in a few years, one-on-one with some developments there, and fascinating developments to talk about. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 29th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and a bunch of podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Post Show, where I host live streams following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday with co-hosts, and live calls and emails and on-site correspondence, and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast featuring the weekly flagship, which yesterday was my co-host was Todd Martin. So hope you all check that out. And also interviews and other special features on that blue feed. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app if you haven't yet and subscribe to that. In addition to this, our red feed, the post shows. And also search PW Torch to subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. The other voice you hear is Travis Bryan from the now VIP exclusive PW Torch East Coast Cast. Travis, welcome back to the Coast Chair. Good to talk to you.
It's good to be back. Thanks for the invite.
Excellent. Yeah. Let's look about the phone number and email and then get right to more analysis here. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558 when you call push 1. That plays you on the switchboard and lets us know you want to be on the show. You can also just call and listen if that's easier than streaming the show on a website, which many of you do. You can email us also if that works better, especially if you're not going to live stream the show or you just don't want to sit on hold and wait for us to bring you on. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We'd love to hear from more of you who we haven't heard from before. I mean, I say this all the time, but don't be shy. We welcome new input, new voices, and differing opinions. That's why we aren't just in a little silo with two hosts who talk to each other all the time. That's why we have dozens of different co-hosts who join me, and we open up the phone lines and don't discriminate in reading emails. Be part of the conversation, push back, or add different opinions and or just reinforce things that you think we're onto and you've got something to add to it. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Okay, so let's get two phone calls. We're going to start with Frankie in Milwaukee. Frankie, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you again. What's in your mind about
tonight's
episode?
Hey, how's it going, man? How's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, man. First thing I want to bring up is, did anybody notice how Solo was trying not to laugh when Jimmy got bitch slapped? Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say that. Travis is on the show. Of course you can. You can, but we prefer you not to draw a lot of attention to it. Just flow with it.
Okay. So, yeah, he got slapped, and I'm like, dude. Oh, he kind of – it looked like he oversold it, and then it looked like Solo was crying not to laugh.
That's funny. I have to rewatch that. I didn't pick up – did you, Travis?
I didn't pick up on the – I thought Solo looked confused. Like, why are you on your ass after this tiny woman slapped? Like, okay, she mollywopped him. I'm not going to hold her, but – there was no need to set, unless he was just so surprised that she hit him as hard as she did.
That's possible.
He kind of just, his body reacted.
He was,
went down.
It looked like he really oversold it for one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. And I thought Solo just kind of looking confused, like, that wasn't what you were supposed to do. And then
if you go back and look at it, I want your guys' opinion later on. But to me, it looked like he kind of kirked the smile a little bit, like he was trying to force himself not to laugh.
Yeah.
Because when it happened, and I'm like, dude, how could you not laugh? Because that was like, it was funny as hell how he fell.
Yeah. What else,
but
Frankie?
The other thing I really wanted to bring up, and I know most people probably won't believe me, and they'll probably say, yeah, right. But if you go back, and I'm not sure if our old podcast is still up, but we used to run a podcast, a wrestling podcast back in the day, called GSWR, Gold Standard Wrestling Report. And we would do, like, live reactions to the pay-per-views. And it was when they were really, really trying to push Roman and everybody would still boo him. And we sat there as a group and said, you know, Roman can't cut a promo. And I can't remember which one of us said it and said, you know what would really work? If you stuck Roman as a heel and gave him Paul Heyman as a mouthpiece, that would work. And I'm like, oh, like all of us agree.
Uh-huh.
Like, that'll,
yeah, right.
That
sure,
awesome.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I know. No one's going to agree with us. But if our podcast is still up, I'm going to try and find it. And if I find it, I'm going to email it to you. But that was, I swear, that's exactly what happened. And then, like, a year later, year and a half later, it happened. And we all just sat there and looked at each other like, dude, we should get some royalties for that. Because we all sat there on the podcast and said that, and we're like, that just happened. Whether
good
you
job,
want
Frankie.
To believe
so what,
me
how,
or not.
Yeah, so no, that, Frankie, that's fine, but how does this apply to SmackDown? We got that. Just, I assume that applies
well,
something with Heyman
it
tonight?
It was just like, because how you were saying with Roman Reigns needing the mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Like you were talking earlier with, you know, when you stuck him with Paul Heyman, it just kind of like branched off for him. Like that was me, like that's, I'm like, we talked about that on our podcast like a year before it even happened.
Yeah, no, you
and
said that three times. So let's keep the listeners entertained here, though, without patting yourself on the back three times in a row saying the same thing. We got to keep it.
All right, well. I'm going to keep listening. Y'all keep doing everything, man.
Okay. Thanks, Frankie. Appreciate it. I want to call and not comment on the show, but just say, you're to go.
Boy, if you don't.
What's your
all
right.
No. I'm just trying to get myself together.
You're Solo when Jimmy went down.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Joe in Albany, New York next. Joe, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Yeah.
I'm not gonna pat myself on the back about anything, but I will say that I really enjoyed tonight's show, start to finish. I think that maybe they might be kind of finding their groove back with this bloodline. I just like that Jimmy's such a ham, you know, and he's playing the role perfectly of wanting to be the tribal chief. And what's funnier sometimes than him trying so hard is Paul Heyman and Solo's reaction to him doing it, you know, because it's just, I'm getting a kick out of it. And I think that it's given it legs. And, you know, out of all of the members of the Bloodline, Jay's my favorite. And I wasn't really sure I felt about him moving on to the other show and all that. I'm still not sure how I feel about Jay on Raw right now with the whole Judgment Day and all that. It's all right. But I'm enjoying Jimmy, and I think it's really good. The Rey Mysterio and Santos Escobar match I thought was really good tonight. And I didn't expect Santos to turn on him, but I still think it's going to happen. And it was a shot kind of after the match where he had, like, accepted defeat, but you could almost see in his face, I think he did a good job of this, if that was the intent, of he accepted it, but
man,
he wasn't happy about it. You know, but not just happy about it, like, shucks, I lost, but like unhappy to the point where I feel like it looked like he wanted to do something. And so I guess I throw in that to you guys. What do you think?
Yeah, it definitely is another top topic that we haven't gotten to yet, but coming out of SmackDown tonight. The you know, Cole just said matter-of-factly, oh, they were going to have a show of respect before the Profits attacked him. And I'm like, are we sure about that? You know, Escobar looked dejected and disappointed. But, you know, in any time in pro wrestling, you know, one promo after another is the wrestlers who are facing each other talking about the mutual respect they have for each other. It portends doom of that friendship or mutual respect. But they didn't do the breakup. And it's fine. It's kind of like MJF and Adam Cole, like, well, it's going well, and, you know, we can keep them together. We don't have to pull the trigger quickly. We can tell more of the story here. And it gives, a good opponent for the Street Profits. I assume Rey and Escobar team up, not just Escobar's underlings. You know, they'll be the entry point probably and lose first. So, Travis, what do you think about the way that they told that story tonight? And, yeah, the observations from Joe that he's bringing up about, you know, what were they trying to communicate to us was going through Escobar's mind. Obviously, it's open for interpretation, but they want us to at least consider and steer us towards wondering probably whether Escobar is as gracious in losing as he was working hard to seem, but maybe on the verge of not being able to put up that front anymore.
I saw regret.
Right.
Like, man, if I would have gouged the eyes that right there or held the tights, I could have, you know, but they haven't explicitly said, you know, hey, you Ray, are the reason why I'm a, you know, Scientifico, you know, I'm a babyface now. You know, but that's the story. That's what it was. He was a heel who had this kind of interaction with Ray backstage, and they had this, you know, mutual respect thing, and then that was the turn. Like, he started hanging out with Ray and being a good guy. And again, that's just a story they tell. They haven't explicitly brought attention to it or had anyone say it. But that's kind of what I felt like. Man, if I would have just not have been such a, you know, such a mutual respect, mutual admirations club kind of match here, and if I'd have treated him like, not that he went easy on him, because he really, you know, but he did it in a way that was, you know, clean and fair and above board. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
I like
it. Escobar thinking, go ahead, Joe. You and I are thinking the same thing.
No, sorry. Started jumping. No, I like what Travis, I guess that's what I was trying to articulate, was that it's almost as if he was like, you know, if I didn't want to have such a squeaky clean match with you, I could have beat you. You know what I mean? Like, I want to rip your eyes. There was something there, like, you know, and I just, I'm, I'm glad they didn't pull the trigger already, and I'm glad that they're letting, you know, the kind of the slow burn you brought up Adam Cole and MJF. It's good, you know. It gives you a few weeks, and it builds the suspense, and then you don't know when it's coming, and that's, I think, you know, we throw around terms like long-term storytelling. It's sometimes things just need to breathe, and we don't need to pull the trigger 2 weeks. You know, let us get invested, because the more we care, you know, the more impactful it is. I was going to say also a kind of critique, the women's division. I don't know how you guys are feeling about it lately. I don't know. Like, I guess of the women that were on tonight, I don't really want to see any of them with the championship, but then I don't really have like a better option. Io's all right. You know, but I kind of feel like Bayley had a good match with Charlotte tonight, but I feel like Bayley is just kind of, there's one that I think I would like to see a little faster movement. If that means, I just said that, you know, dragging it out is good sometimes, but here's, I feel like Damage Control has been dragged out too long, and that because of it, I've forgotten kind of why I like Bayley so much. You know, I don't know if there's one person in that group that really stands out more than the other. I think they're all just kind of there. I know Dakota's injured and whatnot. But what are your thoughts on the women's division in general? Let's just stick to SmackDown, I guess, because I'm not, I like all the women, but I'm not super impressed or know where anything is. I think it's kind of dry, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, Travis, what Joe said, answer that, and bring into it, like, how are we supposed to feel about Charlotte? How are we supposed to feel about Asuka? There's not really a babyface in this matchup. There's just Charlotte, who's a star above all else, which I'm actually kind of fine with, because I don't think she's particularly good at either specifically being – she's good at specifically being heel. I shouldn't say that, but she's not good at specifically being a face. So if they want her to just sort of be above everybody else and acting that way, but you're allowed to cheer her, then triple threat matches are the way to go. But don't you want a solid, clear-cut babyface in that spot? And – Asuka's not really that. Asuka's just sort of the, you know, a senior member of the roster, super respected, has a distinct personality, but there's nobody you're like really being directed to cheer for. So anyway, that's my observation too.
Bianca's on the shelf, but you know, taking a break, you know, for an indeterminate amount of time.
Yeah,
you know, she
but
is.
We have a triple threat
without her.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have a triple threat match, and that's a storyline going into a PLE where nobody has really any kind of story they've told where you'd be like, oh, I want to root for her for this reason. You can sort of have your own favorites, but it's sort of your own decision. There's not really anything steering you. That's my point.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes that happens. But I think it's happening not because they're going, hey, you know what, let's let the fans choose. I think that's like, hey, this is what we got, and we got to make the best of it.
I agree.
I thought Charlotte had a look on her face at the end when Asuka made her claim, like, I want to complain. How dare you come in, and who do you think you are coming out of nowhere getting, you know, but she can't because she's the queen of coming out of nowhere, getting involved in people's stuff and getting title matches and opportunities. So, good. The women's division on SmackDown specifically is a bit, you know, lacking. They tried to get the Shotzi stuff. That just, you know, that didn't work. It doesn't seem like any of the personality stuff is working. Yeah. Like, they have everybody has fine matches. Everybody's a good athlete and very, you know, good to great wrestlers. The personality stuff is, and I think that's what the caller means by dry, there's just not a lot going on.
Yeah, just not much to sink your teeth in. You know, we've had instances, you know, in the women's, I mean, I praise WWE's women's division all day long because I think that they not only have, like, the best athletic women, but I think that, you know, since this revolution, which is several years old now, but I feel like they've invested more time in storytelling, and I think it's just kind of meandering a bit, and I hope, you know, give them some time, I guess, but I haven't really been impressed by anyway. Charlotte comes out, I used to kind of perk up a little bit, oh crap, you know, Charlotte's out. Now I'm like, oh, Charlotte's out, you know. And I think that they could probably do a better job. Yeah.
Say that again,
tell
bro.
The story.
I actively scowl when Charlotte comes out. I'm like, yeah, mood's dampened.
last thing I was going to say, guys, and then I'll let other callers get on. Just kind of an observation and then throw it to you guys to find out what you think. I'm loving how they're weaving in NXT in these shows lately, you know, and back and forth too. You know, I believe it was a couple months ago that some higher up, I'm forgetting now, in WWE said they were, you know, kind of invested again in making NXT a third brand versus the developmental. Still, I guess both. I don't know. But I think that it's I like that Dragon Lee was on the show. I think that he was impressive on his match with Raw. I think it's great that he's going to be on SmackDown. I like that we've been introduced to Tiffany. What's your last name?
Tiffany Stratton.
There it is. And the whole Becky Lynch, Dominik's involvement. What do you? I think that that's helped their NXT ratings, and I think that it's making for. I think that it's a good way to introduce us to some of these stars, instead of the way they used to do it, where they'd be on NXT forever, and then all of a sudden they're on Raw, and you're like, who is this person? Giving us a little taste, planting folks in the crowd. Here's a match with somebody you've never seen before, but you're going to be super impressed, and then they deliver, and it's great. So I kind of leave it that way. I'm enjoying it. How do you guys feel about the involvement of NXT in the main roster shows? And thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Joe. Great hearing from you. Travis, what do you think?
I think it's telling that Bron Breakker isn't a part of any kind of crossover thing. I think he got one role appearance or something 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. Was Ciampa a part of it? I kind of vaguely remember it. So that's surprising that Dragon Lee is past him. Obviously, Carmelo Hayes is getting spotlighted and attention, and he's been on Raw and had some good stuff, some good interactions, like memorable stuff, not just throwaway stuff. And I thought he had next, but I wonder what's the delay with him.
Yeah, so I think sometimes someone not being brought in before others is a sign that they want to wait, that they actually believe in them more than the others. Mm-hmm. So if you get brought up and they got nothing for you, end up like Cameron Grimes. If you get, you know, brought up, you know, brought in, but, you know, you sort of integrated into a storyline, but it's not really super memorable. And it just like, it's a way to cross promote NXT, like Braun's first appearance, I guess, then that's the next level. But the top level is that they really believe in someone. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but it's at least consistent with it. They might be wanting Braun to have a major moment when there is space in the main event scene and they believe he's ready as the heel to come in and make a big impact. And they want it to be, you know, the Raw after WrestleMania where they hit the reset button, boom, Braun's now a centerpiece. If they bring Bron Breakker in now, they got things figured out. They're not going to turn him into a main event star for the Rumble or Mania this quickly with the pieces that they have in place, unless there's some injuries or, you know, they get desperate. So yeah. I just don't look at it as a negative. To me, like, you'd much rather be Bron Breakker on NXT right now, developing your heel persona, getting a big push, than Cameron Grimes, who they've clearly already lost faith in.
For sure. I don't even mean that in a main roster spot. I just mean I don't see him as somebody who hasn't watched NXT consistently in 2 years, you know, since the 2.0 stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see him. I don't see his name. I don't see him. I know who Tiffany Stratton is. I know who Carmelo Hayes is. I know who Trick Williams is. I know who now I know who Dragon Lee is. He's been, you know, like, these are folks that I know. Even Wes Lee, like, I know that guy. But Bron Breakker, I don't see him in anything. They don't like promote him. They don't Bron Breakker versus this guy tomorrow. You know, tomorrow on NXT.
I don't think they don't want you thinking about him until they're going all in with him. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, maybe they're really down on him, and I'm wrong. But, like, to me, this is consistent with well, yeah, when we're deciding to get in the Braun Breaker business, you're going to know it. Not sort of halfway like Wesley. You're going to know it.
Sure.
So that's my thinking there. I mean, the crossover has been effective. It's led to pops and ratings. I think it's great for Dominic, you know, to have a place to go and just work more often, pay some extra dues. You know, I mean, like the idea, oh, Dominic's super over and he had a great match. A great match, TV match this week. So I think you want him to overcome the idea that he got to start on second or third base in his career path by having him do some extra work and then just get better in NXT. And I think he's helping draw ratings. It's given Becky something to do and to give a rub. I just think they've done it smart. You know, I mean, Baron Corbin is better in that atmosphere than if they've got nothing for him on the main roster. And now after spending time in NXT, when he comes back, it'll work. Really what they've done is they've turned NXT into a bit of what used to happen in the territory days, where a Baron Corbin type would kind of run out of steam and the promoter's like, yeah, we're going to send you or encourage you to go to this other territory for 6 months or a year. We want this to be your home base. We want you to come back, but go there, go away for a while, and then you'll be fresher when you come back. And that's kind of what they're doing with NXT, and I like it. Obviously, it's a smaller audience than Raw and SmackDown, but you can watch it if you want, and a lot of people do. So it's not like Baron Corbin is completely gone poof like in the territory days, and you don't know where he went unless you read the magazines, and even then, you know, it's a smaller audience. But it's a completely different atmosphere. So if he can make more of himself there, then people who are watching him can anticipate him coming back to Raw or SmackDown at a later time. So I just think they're doing a good job with it. I think there's a good synergy. I don't think there's any rule that says they can't do it. It's interesting to compare it to ROH, but ROH just, it's available, but it's seen by so many fewer people. And it's just, you know, Tony Khan hasn't designated what it stands for, just that it has this rich history. But it's interesting to compare how the two are being handled, especially when you have, you know, the NXT championships or the North American belt or the women's title appearing in the ecosystem of Raw now. And, you know, we've been real critical of that happening in AEW. AEW fans have been. And why isn't it as bad when WWE does it with Raw and NXT? And I'm not sure I have the answer to that, but it just doesn't feel like it's there's a danger. It's a glut of too many titles, but it doesn't come across as a problem at this point to me. Are you okay with that, Travis? Like having the NXT belts come over to Raw, or do you think that's something they should just draw a line on and not do?
I would have. At a different point in the past, would have said, "Oh, it's too much. They don't need to." But your audience knows, and not like having Tiffany Stratton show up on Raw without her NXT Championship belt. It's like, well, I know she's the champion. I certainly could find out easily.
Well, what about defending it though?
That like I have a more of an issue with.
Yeah,
but I know what's happening. Like I get why they're featuring NXT. Like, well, TV rights deals are coming up, and they want leverage, and they want ratings to be a certain way,
exactly.
And you know, and I can't help but have that knowledge, and it comes into my thinking and how I, like hair or one way or the other. So I used to have an issue with it, but I understand why. And also Raw's 3 hours, so it's not like you don't have the time. And if you want NXT to feel like a show worth watching, you know, have some folks show up and interact and get some viewers intrigued, and maybe they'll tune in, 24 hours later to that shit.
Yeah. All right, I'll throw back to Joe. Do you have any follow-up on any of that, or are you good? Actually, I think he already signed off, so. Yeah, we'll move on then. So we got that covered. Let's go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Thanks for having me, guys. What's on my mind is I want to comment on a few of the comments that you guys have made before I get into what I felt about SmackDown. I think that,
sure.
First of all, Wade, I enjoy Spicy Wade with the one caller, like, hey, man, get to the point or get to the point. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I credit that to Travis, because when Travis is on, I think he brings, like, an edge out of you, man. You know, there's a ruthless aggression. There's a ruthless aggression when Travis is in the building. So, you know, I want to commend you for that.
Jay, I appreciate the comments. I wouldn't say it's ruthless aggression. It's just Minnesota aggression, which is a little less than ruthless. But, yeah, I know what you're saying.
It was very polite, but he still told him, boy, if you don't move on.
Yes, exactly.
Fair. All right. How about we'll go respectful aggression. So
there you go, yeah.
I want to comment on the NXT thing, man. For me, I don't watch NXT anymore, not because I don't like it. I just don't really have the time. But what they're doing, I've actually always wanted them to do, at least since, like, you know, I mean, we can all agree that, like, that golden era of the black and yellow NXT, you know, that was a great time in wrestling. But I was, like, very, very attached to that. And anytime I would see somebody be at the end of their run in NXT, I would always be worried, like, all right, they're going to the main roster, but is it really the main roster for them? Like, it was so many times where they took a guy or a girl and they didn't really do anything with them, and they act like the NXT thing didn't exist, where it was like that was a developmental territory, but they had become so strong as a brand that they had a hardcore audience that really, really identified with the characters, and it really, like, broke our hearts when they went to the main roster and did nothing. So what I always was an advocate for was that, you know, you take those Dolph Ziggler's, those Baron Corbin's, those guys who weren't really doing anything, and you bring them down and you keep, you know, the Nakamura's or the Gargano's, like these guys that had kind of like run through everything they could do. You know, you bring the people that weren't doing anything on the main roster down and give them more things to do. So I like that they're doing that, man. I think that's a great idea, and it's giving people rubs, and, you know, they're even using top stars like Becky Lynch. So I'm a fan of that. Now, if I can just continue on, I will say that I want to get into I feel like now that Roman is getting ready to, like, start appearing again, we started to pick up, like, steam as far as the purpose of what the Bloodline is doing right now. And I'm just seeing it as Jimmy's kind of like, you know, I'm a big advocate of, like, National Geographic, you know, animal culture, if you will. Like, I like to see how animals interact in their, like, groups or with other animals. And what I'm seeing right now, this is a case of the Bloodline is like a pack of lions, and Jimmy and Solo are like those brother lions that when the daddy's away, and as in this case Roman Reigns, when the dad's away, the male lions, the younger male lions, all kind of like vie for dominance of the pride, but they don't really have mm-hmm. the control or leadership or respect of their peers in order to, like, actually do that. So it's like Heyman is kind of like the mama just waiting for the daddy to come home, and he's calling Roman and saying, hey, man, these boys acting up. Like, I need you to get home and take care of this. So it's built – it's back to that state, like Rome, like Wade, you always say, like, the beauty of the Bloodline, which is why the Roman absences don't matter as much historically, is because they always build to what Roman's going to do or say when he comes back. So I think that with there's been, like, a long absence, and, you know, the Bloodline's not at its peak anymore, but I feel like they've started to build that momentum as to, like, okay, I see what the story is when they come back. It's going to be like, Jimmy, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're not really him like that. You know what I'm saying? And Solo's the silent guy, but Solo's even kind of like, you know, maybe I could do this. You know, like, that's the vibe. I'm getting, like, Jimmy's vibe is like he's the big personality, so he's taking over because Solo's more reserved, but Solo's still feeling like, yo, I could really do this, you know what I mean? And Jimmy, yeah, you gotta, you know, you better watch it. And Heyman's just like, man, Roman, I need you to get back. So that's what I'm
saying. We can't forget about those moments with Solo and Roman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
With the beads or the necklace, the lay.
Yeah.
A couple other looks and you know, Roman saying, Roman busting out laughing when he said, I think Solo should be the should be the tribal chief, and Roman just lost his shit. Like, what a stupid idea. And Roman Solo's over there like, wow, like, he really is laughing at the idea. So yes, you can't have the big Roman's back. What's he going to do if he doesn't go away and let the kids play and get into mischief and stuff?
Jay, I got to say, you made a good point. Jay, I'll interject this real quick. I know what it's...
Okay, go ahead.
Well, no, you can wait because you're going to like this. when you made your good point, I like your analogy about the animals and all that. That was great. And I was so tempted to just jump in and go, Jay, you're repeating yourself. Can you get to the point? And like, if you appreciate it, when you're the target of such aggression, however you want to label it. But anyway,
That's
why I was tempted to do it, because you would have been all outraged, because you're like, I didn't do what Frankie did. I'm making a point. I'm moving it forward. I'm not repeating myself. All right, go ahead.
I was really just trying to get all my shit in, man, and just like, you know, I wanted to just enter the clip. But what I wanted to say about Solo is I feel like the thing with Solo is only loyal to whomever the tribal chief is, because he was sent by the elders to guard and protect the tribal chief. And as time goes on, his thinking is maybe I could be the tribal chief. But he's got Roman as an alpha. Big brother Jimmy is, you know, boisterous and just big personality. Jay is really like the heartbeat of the family. And then, you know, Sammy was the one who always was pumping Solo up. And, you know, like, they, you know, I think this Solo's just kind of like down in the pecking order because he's the youngest. But, you know, I think he's just loyal to whomever is in that role. So it's like, at any given moment, it can. Once Roman loses the title, that's when everything is like truly going to fall apart. Whenever, if ever that happens, but you know, I think Solo's just really loyal to whomever the tribal chief is, until it could be him.
Yeah, no, I think that's real good analysis of you know, his origin story and what the constitution that guides his actions and his reactions. Travis, what do you think?
No, I agree. I'm with you all the way there.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. Yeah, I don't have a lot to add. I just think you're spot on.
Yeah,
that's all I got to add. I mean,
before you let Jay go, I have to assume that you follow or are aware of the animal lover kid TikToker MN. I don't know how to pronounce his name. But he's a young black guy, and he does the green screen stuff, and he talks about animals. And he's like, "Are you familiar, Jay?"
If I'm honest, Travis, and I'm gonna be honest, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Oh well, as
but
I'm
I
want
to hear what you got to say.
Yeah, no, go follow him, go check his stuff out. And I don't know this kid. This isn't not a yeah, but just Jay. Being a fan of National Geographic and stuff, this guy would probably be right up your alley. MNDIAYE_97. Oh, geez. He's like 26.
Okay.
Child. Yeah, so go follow him and check him stuff out.
Maybe his favorite athlete wears number 97, and he's actually like 57.
Yeah.
Or he's 12. I don't know. All right. Travis, you made him a star. You've made him a star. You've taken him to the next level.
Yeah.
Cool, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for having me.
Enjoy your weekend. Yep. Don't forget, everyone will be here after Collision tomorrow night. Eric Kroll joining me. So if you are an AEW fan, also consider listening live to us after Collision ends tomorrow night. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558, push 1, if you want to sneak in and get a call in before we wrap up here tonight. But we got Brad from Florida next. We still got Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, too. Brad, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade and Travis. Travis, I always love when you're on. I always just love hearing you. Wade, thank you. I'm bookended by Jay in Michigan and Sean. That's really great, man. Those are two really great callers. But I have to call and say this. I don't know the guy, obviously. I've seen a lot of interviews on him. I watched him all through NXT. But I am so proud of LA Knight and so happy for him. I am so thrilled for this guy, guys. Like, if you think about it, reflecting on the releases from this past week, he easily could have been, I would say it had a 90% chance of happening, that he could have been one of those releases. And for him to have elevated himself. For him to have elevated himself to the number two or three person in all of WWE right now, I mean, I don't know how you could put him any lower than three. I mean, you know, Roman, Cody, him. I don't know, but for what he's done and to see him come out, and honestly, like, I don't want to say upstage Cena. That's maybe not the right word, but almost like even more eagerly anticipated than Cena, at least from my vantage point. I don't know how it was in the arena because I kind of just tuned into you guys. But to see that is just what makes wrestling so great, to see someone succeed at the highest levels and someone who was basically written off. You know, it really is a very special thing that we're seeing with LA Knight. And to see him come in and get that reaction and be seen as tag partner, we're seen as like, oh, my God, this guy's going to team with me. Sign me the
right,
hell up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Was really special. I mean, honestly, it was amazing, and I loved it. And I just wanted to say that about that because, again, he easily could have been one of these guys that was released. He would have been with the Maximum Male Models, and, you know, he was Max Dupree.
I mean, he almost was released back then when he was Max Dupree.
Yep. I mean, Vince wrote him off, and it was, you know, the timing of Vince resigning and Paul Levesque taking over and go, I know we can do more with this guy, and I'm going to listen to his gripes because I think he's got a point. And McMahon is like, who are you to have a gripe? We're giving you an opportunity of a lifetime. And Levesque is like, no, you're making good points. This isn't the right role for you. You can do more. It just took a different boss, basically, to give him the chance. And, you know, there's a lesson in there somewhere, but, you know, for promoters everywhere, that sometimes, you know, a guy, especially a guy who's been around as long as he has, even if you're like, who do you think you are? Which was, you know, kind of Vince's approach to it. Yeah. I mean, you know, the attitude in WWE still, from what I hear, and obviously it's different in different pockets, but it's largely, we're skeptical this is going to last, but we are not scared to make money with him until fans, you know, run out of their, you know, until things
shouldn't
fade.
Shouldn't it just be the ethos of everything you do?
Yes, that's exactly. I felt that way about. I thought they should have gone with Titus O'Neil for like 3-4 months on top. I mean, like, Apollo Crews should have been on top for like 4 months until he just became ordinary. You know, like, just when someone is either not defined down yet but has talent, or they clearly, the fans are latching onto them. Like, you know, Damian Sandow. Like, okay, you've got, you're like, oh, I don't think because of this and this. It's like, unless it's egregious, you know, like he's, you know, dropping drugs in women's drinks at bars, you know, like, I mean, you know, something horrible. You're like, we can't be behind pushing this person. Just like ride the wave, make money, because that means you shouldn't delay something that's surefire. Like last year, they shouldn't have said, well, LA Knight is hot, so let's delay Sammy in Montreal and go with Knight. You know, if that had lined up, there's things that are just, you don't, you just stick with your plans. And that's usually what's going on is they you know, WWE right now does put months of thought into what they're going to do. And when someone gets hot, it sort of annoys them because it's like, oh, we got to deal with this now. We had all this stuff mapped out. Do we really want to displace something we've been planning? And that was the case with LA Knight going into SummerSlam. They didn't want to displace the stuff that they had, the stories that they were telling, but they did obviously plot something out for him. And I said that, I had heard that, you know, just everyone be patient. It's not going to happen this week or next week, but within a few weeks, it'll start happening. And yes, you're right, Travis. Like, just ride waves. But my point in all this is, they don't think they're on. They don't think he's going to be a big star at this level or higher 3 years from now. I mean, they just don't. They think there's weaknesses. They think it's a little bit, you know, of a kind of paper thin shtick that doesn't have a lot of depth. But he can surprise them. And so far, I think he actually probably is a little bit, showing a little more range. He still has his one botch spot per match. You know, there's things about him that are still there, but I'm not ruling out that, and I don't think they should, and, you know, but it's up to him too. He's got to step up and be better and hungry and professional and ask questions and be humble, but also keep that aura of having a chip on his shoulder and manage all of that. And not everybody can, but he might surprise them. And maybe 40, you know, something year old LA Knight is different than 32-year-old, you know, Eli Drake or whatever. Yeah. You know, I mean, there might be a maturity there and life changes him. And so I don't know. I don't know where, you know, I just do not know where he's going to be in 3 years, but I'm just saying management doesn't think they're onto something that 3 years from now is going to be a centerpiece act, but they're willing to ride it out for now and make money with him and see if he can, in a way, prove them wrong, that they're skeptical this will last. Brad, back to you.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, but there's no denying. I mean, he literally has risen to being at least a top five act. Like, if you're going to a show, like, who do you want to see come out of the, you know, who do you want to see come out? I mean, LA Knight is right there at the absolute top of the industry. And I think that's why LA Knight is hesitating on some of his shtick, like calling, you know, using the dummy and, you know, he used to say dummy when he was in, you know, Impact or whatever it was. I don't know. I think he's holding off, like, you know, the whole thing with the Kevorka that he kind of said at the beginning, but he kind of stopped. Like, now it's just, yeah, and let me talk to you. But I think he's holding off so he has some more to go. And you can say that about anyone. You know, you could say, oh, Stone Cold shtick is going to run out and, you know, whatever. You know, but it's working, and it's really incredible to see him, again, at the top of the industry. That's what's amazing. And you know, deservedly so, because he fought a lot to get there. It's funny, the antithesis of that is what happened with Rick Boogs, and I know this is so unimportant, but I'll be very brief, where Vince was on his side, or seemingly, and Paul Levesque was not. And Rick Boogs, I think, got a raw deal. He's the release that I'm the most upset about, because I think you could have had him, you know, chasing after Nakamura. Hey, Shin, let's get back together, man. And, you know, Shinsuke's like, no. You know, like, you could have had something there. Even after the injury, but whatever. Just on Bobby Lashley, really quick, just shifting gears, you know, I don't know what he was so proud about. Like, to me, when the Street Profits did their little beatdown of the one guy in Legado del Fantasma, or LWO, Joaquin, or whoever it was, or Cruz del Toro, I don't know which one it was, but it didn't seem like that was something to be like, now this is what I was looking for, you know? Like, what was so great about that? Like, yeah.
Well, I think it's obvious that it's not the physicality. That wasn't the most vicious beatdown. I, like, put a couple moves on him and, you know, let him roll out the ring. It was the idea that they can go out there and be heels without saying, I want you to go out there and be heels. And that was what they... what they did, they went out, they jumped some couple of guys from behind after they were in a grueling, emotional championship match, and then, you know, put the boots to them and posed like bad guys. And that's what Bobby Lashley wanted to see. That means they won't hesitate next time they get an opportunity with somebody slides a chair in the ring or the ref's back is turned or what have you. And I thought
they
told the story a little too quickly. Like, at 8:20 or, you know, 7:20 Central, he's, you know, I'm upset. And by like 8:45, he's like, yeah, clapping because they did the one thing. I'm like, maybe if this was 2 weeks from now and they had did that, you know, 3 weeks in a row, then he goes, okay, I'm taking you guys seriously as a couple big bad tough guys. But that's just, you know, that sometimes that happens when you got to timetable speed things up.
Yeah, it's even seemed a little jarring that Lashley was so down on him this week, when last week he was just sort of giving them a pep talk, like they were still his project. And then this week it was like, oh, I'm done.
Well, no. Well, last week he told him, I want my suits back. I want everything back. If you don't want to do it. And they were in, this was right after they lost, and they went back to him backstage. And Lashley's like, you know, I want my stuff back. If you guys, and then I think they replayed it tonight.
But did that come across more as like, I'm trying to think what analogy I can use. Like, it was that the ultimate threat of like, I'm done with you guys, but it still felt like, unless you show me more, it didn't feel like a full-fledged breakup. It felt more like, I'm willing to go this far, give me my suits back, but it was sort of implied, go,
well,
you know.
He did. He was tough, but at the end he said, if you don't want to, if you're not going to show more, whatever, then this relationship will,
and that was
over.
My takeaway. Yeah, that was my takeaway. It's like, it wasn't a full-fledged break.
I mean, it was close. It was as close you get to a full-time break, like an ultimatum, certainly.
Yeah.
And they're looking at each other like, oh, what are we going to do? And I thought their reaction at the beginning of the show when he came out or when they came out to confront Bobby, and then, like, Bobby kind of just blew him off. And I thought they looked kind of like a couple of putzes there. Like, came out just to, and then when they jumped out of the ring, I'm like, wait, are they going to like beat up Lashley to prove to Lashley? And then they just got in his face, and then he just kind of gave him one last little brow beating, and then turned his back and left again.
Travis, do you like this? Yeah. Do you like, because they weren't joshing around, they weren't doing the usual stuff. Montez wasn't singing while he was cutting a promo, and Parker or Angelo Dawkins wasn't making the whatever whooping noises thing. Yeah, like they dropped almost everything that defined the Street Profits as this, you know, boisterous babyface act. And do you like that? Like, is this a good, just stepping back for a second in a macro sense, do you like this as a new chapter for them, and do you think it's going to last?
I don't think they're going to drop completely all of their stuff. They'll make it obnoxious, more obnoxious than it was, and they'll do it in a heelish way. And antagonize the fans and the fans' favorites and stuff. I don't think it would be a good idea to completely – maybe the cups and all that, because that's just too interactive and babyfaces. Babyface-ish, but they'll still be the Street Profits that will recognize them as just the heel versions of who they've always been. I mean, because we've seen the heel versions of who they are in NXT. They were, and even maybe when they first got to the main roster. But it'll be just updated with the new look and attitude and stuff. But they'll be who they are. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready for this. I'm glad they're doing this, and I think they'll be good at it. And I think you're right. I think they'll pull back enough and then reintroduce some of what the stuff that they're holding in right now.
Yeah. And tonight wasn't the time to be singing and dancing, even if that was still obviously and clearly their thing. Like, this wouldn't have been the day to do fan interaction or cut a wacky falsetto promo or anything like that. This was, trying to get back into good graces of the guy who put you onto a good barber and gave you a good tailor. I'd like to Street Profits to say what Bobby Lashley brings for them.
Again, besides
a new barber and a tailor on speed dial. Like, what can he get you that you guys couldn't do by yourselves? You're still a tag team. You're still going after tag team championships. You've been doing that for the last 3-4 years. Like, what's the...
And the commentary can fill that in, too. You know, they can make sure that they're underlining, like, hey, the Profits were not... They're spinning their wheels a bit. They weren't growing as a team. They were losing more often. They needed an edge, and you know they were resistant to succumb to Lashley's definition of what it would take for them to succeed. But now they've given into it. They actually seem to be enjoying it. Once they crossed that line into a different zone and a different approach, it turned out that it seems to fit them better than they thought 3 weeks ago it would. Like, whatever, just tell that story and make it seem like Lashley's the guy who is going to steer them away from their instincts to be nice guys and finish somewhere other than first and make sure that they stay on a more ruthless course.
Yep.
Brad, back to you.
Yeah, and just on Santos, you know, what makes him so good to me? The facial expressions and the real, like, pain of losing or the pain of about to having to hit Rey Mysterio on his face at certain points in the match was so real. Like, he's such a good actor. And in NXT, I just, you know, I always noted how good of a, you know, just, I don't know, he just, his expressions and the facial expressions he makes, and I'd like to see more of that because I think he did a great job of that tonight, and I really thought it was very good, and it's what makes, you know, wrestling good, and it's what makes him good in particular, just like just seeing that pain on his face, and it looked so real. And by the last thing I just want to say, Cameron Grimes actually did a pretty good job tonight in his match with Theory. He was actually, like, pretty damn entertaining to watch wrestle. He was good. I'll let you go.
Well, he's got a spark. I mean, he lit a fire under him. You're going to lose in 3 minutes in a TV match, and we're not going to give you a ring entrance or a character. You're going to be a caveman wearing glossy, glittery, glammed-up trunks. Therefore, we have no commitment to who you are, what your identity is, or anything. But, boy, did he get bounced off that ring post. And, you know, I mean, he showed that he's good, but you know, like, he's somebody who, I mean, would shine in AEW. And if he's just going to be a jobber to the stars on WWE TV and they've lost faith in him for whatever reason, something behind the scenes, or they think his character is lost or whatever, he'd have been better to be on the cutback list and go to AEW because he could have really shined there because he's been so good in NXT and the indies. Travis, what do you think of – are you surprised at where Cameron Grimes is at this point?
No. When they drafted him and pretended – that he was going to be that they were going to, you know, make him a big deal, but then he was not even cutting not so great promos. He was ending them with that garbage ass catchphrase, just the did the move like this. And I just was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, he's still doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't going anywhere because it was over for a bit in NXT 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when Million Dollar Man was involved in his angles and storyline and stuff. Like, yeah, it was okay then. But now, when they're trying to present him as something different, and he's still doing that, I knew then, like, well, this won't work. So, no, I am absolutely not surprised he's where he is today.
He's got a lot of in-ring talent and either has bad instincts or has been steered in a bad direction. And I am curious where he ends up in a couple of years, because there's no way he just ends up like, you know, Ms. Dower, Ryback, or, you know, the guy who gets cut and he's like, you haven't heard the last from me. And it's like, yeah, except for autograph shows we have. You know, he's just too good. So I'm kind of curious what happens with him. And
right, and
I'll
his past. I mean, where he's from, I mean, you know, coming from the North Carolina indie scene, you know, it's like the guy clearly wants to be a wrestler. Like, that's his thing. He's not going to, like, no, now that I'm not in the big time, like, I can't go back. No, he'd definitely go back and be an even bigger star, you know, in North Carolina and CFW, whatever. Yeah.
Brad, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, no, he looks really good. I mean, honestly, he's fun. In the ring, he really is. So I hope they could do something with him, but I'll let you get to Sean. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, and have a good evening.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. We're going to go to LaMarcus in D.C. and then Sean and Murfreesboro to wrap up callers here. LaMarcus, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Travis. Hope you guys have a good night. Have you guys mentioned Jay Cargill yet?
No. Good point to bring up.
Okay, cool. I was just going to say, I like that they how much they promoted her on the show tonight. I can't remember. Maybe it was Kenta, the last person they, you know, gave this kind of, I guess, the red carpet rollout to once they signed. They even said her full name, Jay Cargill, which is, I would think, is a good sign that they're going to use her.
There's no way you can bring her in as anything but she is and has been. They missed it when they didn't sign her in 2019, and she went off and became a legitimate star, crossover mainstream star even. No, you don't come bring her in. Oh, here's Keisha Jenkins. Like, no, absolutely not. They better not.
Right. The Emerald Griffin or something. I will say, yeah, I don't think they, you know, wrote a card to anyone like that before. But I think it's also probably give a good sign to, you know, other wrestlers, and especially AEW. Cody didn't really get a red carpet rollout. He's not just going to just sort of introduce him at WrestleMania. But I mean, that's his own sort of kind of treatment. But do you think it's also kind of like a, when I put like a negative toward Tony, just the way that he books and promote wrestling? Because I mean, he had Jay for so many years, and I feel like in 1 week, no, a few days, that they sort of made her a bigger deal than she came off of AEW. I mean, although she was TBS champion for a long time and have under siege street, but do you think this was sort of a better way to promote her than how she's been treated in AEW?
The idea that she's treated any way other than well in AEW, I think, is a bit revisionist and bitter, kind of sour grapes. Folks that are mad they lost a star. So yes, but still yes, WWE. And saying what I just said, you are still correct in that just in a week, just signing and getting the Sports Illustrated and the ESPN kind of buzz and the social media numbers that she got this week, they did make her seem like an even bigger star. And that's just, you know, that's just how it happens. But that doesn't mean Tony treated her bad or was any kind of, you know. Like, no, he made her a star. Now they're WWE's machine's going to get behind her and make her an even bigger star, because that's just the potential she, you know, she has. Outgrew the company she was in, and it was obvious to everybody. And I think that plays into the bitterness. Like, you just feel like, you know, she had a good point in leaving and going off and spreading her wings some place where she could become an even bigger star and do more things. You're just mad that she couldn't do it with your side, because everything's a damn team now.
Yeah. I
thought it was a big deal that they just went to the announcers and were like, we had this major free agent signing and she's a big star. I mean, that it stood out to me as a significant commitment to her and signal to the fans that, you know, there's somebody here who is truly on her way that is notable. And if you haven't heard of her, most of her career was on Friday nights after SmackDown in front of a small audience. She was kind of the Rampage project, you know, getting this winning streak, but she wasn't a centerpiece act in AEW. So it wasn't a Cody signing. I will argue they are already pushing her more than AEW ever did. Not that AEW didn't push her, but they pushed her in a different way. But part of that is because she's better now than she was when AEW started pushing her. But I think AEW is going to look a little bad about not making her one of the top six stars on Dynamite week in and week out for the past, you know, sometime over the past year, and really committing to her, because they didn't.
I almost wish I didn't know who she was. Like, I wish I was a casual fan in that way, that I just didn't know who she was. And my first time seeing and hearing about her was this week on social media, WWE tweeting about her, and then tuning in to SmackDown tonight and seeing the treatment. I would be like, wow, I can't wait to see. I mean, I'm sitting here now like, wow, I can't wait to see her and how they present her. But I just can't imagine how that would feel as a casual, not knowing who, because they don't do this for folks.
Right, yeah, they don't. But there's not even people who haven't watched her in AEW are going to be like, who is this?
Yeah.
And they're going to research online, or they're just going to, you know, go along for the ride. I mean, and you know, but she does have star power. She has confidence, but there's that, you know, that humility of, you know, she knows she's presenting herself in a way, the way that Rock did early on, which is act like you are a star in waiting and that you're on the cusp, but say all the right things about how, you know, you still have to earn it. And I mean, she's either got great instincts or she's well directed and managed by somebody who's, you know, in her ear. But I mean, it's impressive. She is doing exactly what you do at this point when you get a big push, but you say, but I have to do the work. And, you know, WWE believes in her, and this is how you make stars. Sometimes someone is a star and you don't pretend they're not. You don't dilly-dally. And, you know, but she's going to work out in the Performance Center and have to get better, and she's had good trainers already. But, you know, this is next level expectations for her. It's going to be more than a ring entrance and looking good. And, I mean, AEW early on really protected her. I mean, she did not do much at all in the ring, and it was rough, but, you know, her reputation is she was working hard to get better. So, she's going to be a household name. Whether 3 years from now she's a top star or not depends on a lot of factors, including her work ethic or other opportunities that come up that shortens her career, kind of like happened with The Rock.
Yeah, I think she's the type, just from what I see and how I think of her personality, I think she's the type that would thrive in the structured environment of writers and showrunners, but producers. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely think she's going to, she's that environment, that kind of fast paced environment is going to be something that she thrives in.
Yeah.
You wish she was like a casual fan or something. But I was going to say, it's funny because the way I found out that she was signed, I was just, I think, on Instagram or somewhere. And someone that I didn't know watched wrestling posted that she was signed by WWE. And I saw, like, other people that I didn't know, like, even watching wrestling or wrestling fans, mentioned that she was signed. So I was like, I thought that was interesting. And Corey even mentioned what he made coming, a storm is coming or something. Her interest in AEW, so I do like
if she brings her version of which, like the baddies, what they did for a few months,
mm-hmm.
When she had the baddies in every town she went to, she'd have her baddie section. If they do stuff like the audience, the potential viewer influx they have with young women, girls and young women, I think, is just to the moon. Yeah. They can get a lot out of her, man. Yeah.
Do you think they should have brought Mark Sterling over with her? I'm joking. LaMarcus, anything else for us?
As far as her debut, do you think it's going to be like NFT, maybe?
Hey, LaMarcus, let me jump in. You're a little more muffled. I don't know what you did. You're a little more muffled than you're speaking, so I'm kind of straining to hear you. So maybe, I don't know if you went Bluetooth or you can talk more into the phone or whatever, but adjust if you can.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're clear now.
Okay. I'll say, as far as her, maybe you think she's more likely, would it be more like Royal Rumble, NXT, and maybe feud with Becky and be the person to – I feel like she could just, you know, go straight for the NXT title, you know, Tiffany can probably go to the main roster, or then they'll wait for the Royal Rumble. And so, I guess, overall, which brand do you think she will come on? Because I feel like each brand itself for NXT has, like, their big woman, if it's Rhea, Nia, I guess Charlotte, and stuff. So, and I'm not sure they'll want to jump straight to that, but go ahead.
I talked about this, that you know, Nia Jax is I think I mentioned on The Fix last week, the VIP show, that Nia's brought in for a purpose, and it's not to be a perennial top heel. It's to make an impact, but have that then transfer. And I'm wondering, and I don't think it lines up with Jade Cargill being brought to the main roster this quickly, but maybe. I have not heard what the timeline is that they have in mind for bringing her on, but it wouldn't shock me, now that I'm just kind of talking through it, if they're going to have Nia go on this just streak of destroying everybody, and Jade is the one who stops the reign of terror of Nia Jax. So that, I just throw that out there as a possibility. The timeline for that is more, you know, Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, and they, you know, try to build Nia Jax during that time. So brace yourselves, everybody who don't want her on your TV set. I don't think they're going to put Jade on Raw or SmackDown as soon as next month, but I could be wrong. I haven't heard either way. So, Travis, anything you want to add?
No, I got nothing to add to that.
So anyway, yeah, LaMarcus, anything else for us?
Yeah, I think Becky won the NFC title also line up. I'm not sure how far in advance that was planned, but yeah, either I guess Nia or Becky could be a possibility. With the John Cena, I guess segments or whatever you want to call them today, when they're saying, you know, his flight is delayed, he's on his way. I don't remember them doing this for anyone other than Cena, because I don't know if you guys remember the time they were in Boston and they did the, no, Cena just left his home in West Newbury and he's on his way here. And so I think they did that in the beginning of the episode, and then they did like the map of him, like how far he was away from the arena and stuff like that. But I was like, but I guess to you, did this feel like a sort of like a classic John Cena type episode of WWE?
Well, they needed to have the bloodline be able to be bullies and stuff backstage without anybody besides the producers and hapless Jason Jordan trying to stop him and contain him. So yeah, you had to write in why Cena's not there yet.
Yeah, I thought I was waiting for them to show a map, like here's where his plane is, and here's a dot at the airport. Oh, now he's on an Uber, or the limo picked him. The limo picked him up, and now
he's
approaching the arena.
Where did he get a rental Porsche? I mean, I don't. Maybe this is just big time.
I thought it was when you
fly into to that part of the airport. There's not just a Hertz. It's like, you know, Hertz Plus or whatever. You know, for ballers.
Yeah.
I just, you know, nobody's face. But I was like, damn, where is he? He got a rental port. He didn't show up with a driver. He drove himself. But, yeah. Or maybe
clever.
maybe just has high-end cars in all the airports and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
We know some rappers rap about, you know, driving straight from the plane to wherever, so.
Yeah, no, totally, yeah.
I guess, my last question is, if Cena wasn't on, I would know if Cena wasn't doing the couple months on WWE, what do you think the plans would be for Jimmy and the Bloodline if Cena wasn't here? But I guess that the same time, that's probably already baked in earlier as far as the storyline goes. Because I just think, like, if Cena wasn't here, what would the story be? But that's my last question.
Thanks good question. Would it be like AJ taking LA Knight under his wing, Travis?
Yeah, because they're totally mesh. They hang out.
Well, but they do that with people. I mean, the Odd Couple, you know, pairing sometimes. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's good timing because I don't know what they. I don't. No one's really on the sidelines who you think would be getting more attention, but you know. Yeah, I don't have a solid answer to that. Of what they'd be doing if they didn't have Cena, but yeah, I mean it's sometimes this is not the prime season for you know top storylines, but they would have had to come up with something. And yeah, I mean it's fortunate it really worked out well to have Cena here right now, and I was ready to just like I don't want to watch John Cena ever again. He was so obnoxious a couple weeks back, and now I actually think he's been good. Like. He's been on good behavior. He's not hamming it up and being a goof and whatever. It's just like he's back to – he's like John Cena, the top babyface, but minus the dueling chants and the half the crowd or two-thirds of the crowd booing him. It's kind of nice, like, but he is more restrained in what he's doing.
I agree.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, it is Sean from Murphy's World Time. You know what? We made him wait so long. Let's play his jingle.
Let's go to Tennessee. Talking to Sean, let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean, talking to Sean, talking to Sean in Tennessee.
You know, Sean, if your jingle was shorter, I'd probably play it more often. That's really pushing it. But it is catchy. It stays in my head. That's part of, you know, part of the charm. Welcome, Sean.
I appreciate it. So, Wade, that means a lot that you played it. It does. It actually, it touches my heart. It really does. I'm touched. I'm thankful. I come in peace tonight, guys. I come in peace. I'm not going to reiterate anything. I promise you. I love you all. Travis, it's always a pleasure, man. Good to talk to you as well. Can you guys hear me okay, by the way?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, fine.
Okay, good. No, and I say Brad and Jay and, you know, Joe are all such great callers. They you know, they stole a lot of the thunder, but they should. That's what they're here for, to talk about what's going on the show. And so it wasn't a ton to, like, reiterate other than the fact that I did want to go back to Cameron Grimes a little bit, only in the fact that I don't think – like, do I think he was going to be a WWE main eventer, like, world champion? Like, no, I don't think so. But he had so much more to offer than this junk that they have him now. I think
– He absolutely could be in that Chad Gable spot against Gunther with a built-up TV storyline, and he does the thing where he has the great match and he loses – you know, in North Carolina, in his hometown or something. He absolutely could be a challenger to Ray in that U.S. title and having bangers. But, you know, he's not. Yeah. And not even anywhere close.
No, and that's what I say. Like, well, I mean, you're right, Travis. I mean, the to-the-moon stuff is freaking stupid. I'm with you on that. When you get him to the main roster, take that stuff away that's going to make him seem like he's not important, and that kind of stuff just makes him feel like a joke. And it's like, this guy's not a joke. He's great in the ring. He can talk.
Yeah, he got saddled with entering the main roster with his main roster character inherited what happened in NXT, and what happened in NXT was like, what do we do to shake this up? Oh, we'll make him win the lottery, and we'll do a DiBiase angle. And it was so far removed from the original caveman gimmick, but there were remnants of it, and it just made no sense. I mean, he looked like he was doing a toothpaste commercial, or he was dressed going to church. But then they called, like, he'd smile, and I expected a little, like, superimposed little
twinkle.
Twinkle, thank you. Yeah, coming from his teeth when he smiled, and he's got those, you know, blue eyes, and they're just mesmerizing, and perfect hair, and it looks like he does. It totally looks like he's dressed for church or a wedding. And then, oh, but he's a caveman, and it's like nothing made sense about him. They put no thought into it, or they did a terrible job with the thoughts they did put into it, and of course it didn't gain momentum. So they should have just hit the reset button on him. And I know sometimes people are, you know, mad about that, because, like, I've been watching NXT. This is not consistent with his journey. But his journey, you needed to follow his journey for it to make any sense how he arrived. And he should not have looked like he was dressed for Sunday church and still doing a caveman gimmick. It's just, yeah. I was irritated about it then, and I think he deserved better. And people in positions of creative power should have, you know, directed him to do something different if that's what he showed up in.
Yeah, and I think now it's almost like, at this point, wait for a few months, like 6 months, maybe right after WrestleMania or after Mania. Repackage him, tell a good story with him, do something. There's still something there. If you're going to keep him on the main roster, do something better than this. Because this ain't
but if he's losing
it,
in 2 or 3 minutes, if he's losing in 2 or 3 minutes without ring entrances, it's hard to recover from that quickly. He's being defined. This is the definition of being defined down right now. He's not off the radar. He's on the radar, and he's a loser. He's looking good losing, but there's a lot of jobbers over the years who took good bumps and look good losing. So, I don't know. I'm worried for him, but there's so much talent and drive there. But, you know, you do wonder if there's, you know, an attitude issue or something. I mean, like, why would they not? They could put so many people in that spot. Why him, if they have high hopes for him and LeBac knows him well, why put him in that spot and not one of, you know, 10 other people who are, you know, working? I know they cut a bunch of people off the roster, but, I mean, he's probably a victim of cutbacks, roster cuts, because you can't have, you know, East Paul Lee or Dolph Ziggler in that spot. So now, Cameron hasn't done anything lately, so I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And then going back to talking about the women's division, because Joe brought it up about it feels stale in a lot of ways, which I agree. We've talked about that many times, especially Charlotte, like you brought up. I mean, gosh, she's so cold. But the thing that I'm worried about is, and I was thinking about this as it happened, again, I understand, like, I love Bayley. Again, all the stuff ruined with her babyface character. She turned heel, did really, really well. Thought, okay, if we bring damage control together, some good things can happen. I still think Io Sky's on a great trajectory. I still think the future's super bright. She's the champion. There's a bright future there. Is it me, or is it getting to the point now that I think Bayley is losing too much? I'm not saying she can't recover, because she's Bayley. She's really stinking good. Like, she's, even though she's not as good on the mic as she was, you know, 3-4 years ago, but I think she's losing too much. That was a definitive loss tonight. That was very definitive. I don't think that she can't come back from it. I just think it's getting to the point where we can't have her lose every week now. This is getting to be a little much. Are you with me on that? What are you thinking about that?
Travis.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even Charlotte agrees. She called her a damn stepping stone. Just real quick on the Bayley isn't as good on the mic as she was a few years ago. I think it's because she lost her humor. Like, Bayley as a heel worked so well during her ding dong hello days because hello. She was allowed to be funny. Or her version of funny. It was obnoxious and heelish. But with damage control, it's just a different vibe, different dynamic. She's just kind of generic, obnoxious heel. She calls people idiots, but there's just no kind of humor or fun to her heel character. And I think without that, she's generic heel female number 8 on the roster.
Yeah, yep. I agree. I think I was encouraged by Charlotte. It was kind of like, Hangman Page being called out, where it's like by Swerve. It's like, what's going on with you? You know, you used to be this, and lately you've been this. And you know, when attention is brought to someone who's high up on the card, that usually means they're going to own it and turn that into a storyline that is part of a pivot point. They wouldn't say that if they weren't ready to light a spark or pivot their character. So to me, her saying that is it hits too close to home. So they must have a solution in mind to move her to the next level or back to a higher level. And that'll be sort of the impetus for it. So that's my optimistic view of drawing attention to it the way that they did, because obviously she's still very talented. And for Charlotte to say, 4 horsewomen, I mean, it just makes people think of Sasha too. And, you know, do you really want to bring that up if you're not bringing her back and you don't want people missing her? So you're not going to even authorize Charlotte to say 4 horsewomen unless you think it really serves a larger purpose. And that larger purpose seems like we got something in mind for Bayley to get her going again.
Yeah, and I think with EO, I think the, like, going back to EO really fast, I think the fans, and that's what I say, that the fans, you know, she's in this weird, you know, character, which the fans want to cheer her, and I want to cheer her because I love EO. I think she's awesome. Mm-hmm. But she's in this heel role, like, still with Bayley, this faction that's really just going nowhere. It just feels like it's just, they're just kind of there. She's just kind of there, and it's like, well. And then the triple threat, I did not like how they did the triple threat. Again, Wade, I'm with you on triple threats. I don't like them unless there's a really good reason for it. This is not a good reason for it. I'm sorry, no. Charlotte.
They had a really good reason a few months ago with Asuka, Charlotte, and Bianca. Like, it felt like, okay, right. If you're going to get to a triple threat, this is how you do it. It seems like all three have an issue, and, you know, the timing is right just to throw them all in a match together. This is just, we don't got nothing else, and instead of leaving somebody out of the match, they feel they just did Sasha or EO and Asuka on TV, and they don't want to just run that on pay-per-view on, you know, whatever premium show. I don't know, just find something else or find a different way of getting to the triple threat that makes a little more sense than Oscar just comes out and says, "I'm in the triple. I'm in it too."
Well, Sky's like, no, she didn't say that, and Bayley just assumed she did and misinterpreted it, which was kind of funny.
Oh, that's right. That's
that was
right.
Amusing, yeah. But yeah. I don't know that that's the best logic. Like, oh, we're going to make a triple threat match because Bayley thinks she understood, for some reason, what Asuka just ranted about, which doesn't even make sense. But, again, it's amusing. But should that really be how you dictate who is involved in a world title match? I don't think so.
Yeah. Also, it makes whoever's in charge seem like a buffoon that can, why don't they just come out and be like, Bailey's a goofball and is making matches she has no right to. The match is going to be Charlotte versus Io or whatever, which I'd rather it be and have Io go over Charlotte strong.
Totally. Yep. Sean, what else?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And do you think there's any way – I wanted to ask this question real fast before I had my other thoughts. Do you think that there's any way with this damage control eventually going off somewhere that – is there any way to think that Bayley might turn back face? Like they're just going to get tired of her and just turn on her and that's – I don't like that baby face turn that way. I don't think it'd be a smart way to go. Is that possible?
I think Io is the baby face of the group, of the three right now.
Me too.
She's the one, certainly, it's not as, 4 months ago, 6 months ago, the crowd really wanted to get behind Io. That Puerto Rico crowd, I don't know how the next week they didn't just go, you know what, we're making Io the top baby face on, on the show. I know Bianca's there and stuff, but still, like, you know what, we're going for it. I think they went, nope, foreign crowd, let's not, like, well, you're running 6 foreign pay-per-views in a, 15-month span, and maybe you should start taking their reactions into more than just, oh, well, we haven't been here, or we haven't been here in a while. Like, well, listen to what they have to say. And that Puerto Rico crowd really gave it up for EO, and she delivered, but ever since, it's just been kind of the back and forth stuff with damage control. Will they, won't they break up? And Money in the Bank kind of buffered some of that. But it's obvious when they're all – I think Dakota being back and it not just being Bailey in a more of a managerial or valet kind of spot, I think Dakota being back shines a more of a light. I said this from the beginning. Damage control always seemed like three pieces that didn't make any sense why they're together. In real life,
right.
Obviously different folks can be friends. Friend groups can consist of completely different people and personalities. But in this sense, they didn't tell that story. Why or how did Dakota and Bailey and Io become friends enough to want to be a bad girl team and take over the show and do all that kind of stuff? And they didn't do any kind of. But I think it's because they don't necessarily fit. They don't have a natural chemistry of three friends that are on TV together in a group. This isn't Edge and Christian. This isn't, China, HBK, and Triple H. They just don't have that natural kind of chemistry, and they certainly haven't been given anything to supplement their natural friendship and chemistry. EO should be the baby face coming out of whatever they do when damage control is kind of short answer.
Yeah.
Sean, anything else you want to say? You want to bring up?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say, Travis, you were talking about NXT really fast, and Braun, you don't want to know what Braun Breaker is doing right now. He's facing Baron Corbin as both heels. Like, what? What the heck is this all about? Why are these two fighting each other? Ugh. But I wanted to say, I wanted to ask this question. So you guys have been, or I think most people, I think most people are down on Kevin Patrick just from the announcing perspective. I guess I don't disagree. I haven't loved him as far as like his knowledge. And I think he loves the product, wants to be great at what he's doing. I feel like he's on the right track, but it's, man, it's a slow track. I wanted to hear what you guys have kind of thought about him on commentary, you know, trying to be the lead. And I think all three of them are doing well together. I just, if you're wanting, you know, Kevin to be that lead guy on SmackDown, I definitely am with you guys. I don't think he's done the greatest job, but I'm, you know, willing to let it play out and see for a while, because I think he has potential. And I think, again, he loves WWE. I think he wants to be the best he can. But I wanted to hear what you guys thought about him. And Wade, I appreciate you, man.
I mean,
Travis, you guys are great. You know, The Fix is awesome. Every show is awesome. I can't name them all, but they're all great. Go BFT if you're not. You're an idiot. If you're not, sorry, you're still great. I still love you, but you are an idiot for not going BFT. So I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thanks, Sean. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Kevin Patrick is affable. You know, he's likable. I don't think he's, like, offensive or grating or annoying or trying to steal attention over to himself away from other things. He's not too cutesy. He's not too insider. He's not too meta. He's not too casual. He's not too formal. He's not – there's an absence of a lot of negatives, I would argue, with him, but what he doesn't have is anything that he excels in, knowledge or the vocals, unless you're just into the accent, you know, crescendos, cadence. But I think those are teachable and acquirable over time, and I don't think they would put him with Corey Graves and add Michael Cole, but keep him in that spot if they didn't see him as a project with promise. So I think he's a project with promise, and I think Sean's right. He's not good yet, but I also don't – I just don't agree that he's bad, and I think that, I think there's a foundation there that they believe that they can build on. But having Cole sit next to him and give him tips during commercial breaks and before and after shows and produce them and nudge him and have and assume that he's paying attention to what Cole is doing so he can pick up on, oh, Cole did that. That probably should have been me. Next time that happens, I'll think of that or I'll make that point. That's what I think is going on with him. Travis, what do you think?
I think he's, I don't want to say worse. I think he's been more, I think he's been exposed more with the three-man booth. When it was just him and Graves, you say what you want, but he didn't have to split the, you know, it wasn't three voices. It was him and Corey. Now, he's the glorified transition guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so awkward because Cole will be saying something, you know, putting over a thing we just happened, a thing that just happened that we all just saw, and he's bringing the emotions he needs. And speaking of emotions, Cole, emotions are running high this week on, you know, and then he does the read.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what he is now. He's just a glorified transition guy. He never adds anything because I think as a third voice, what's left to add? He's not, when it was just him and Corey, he had no choice but to have opinions, to have, you know, a back and forth, a consistent back and forth with Corey Graves. Now he's a literal buffer between Corey and Cole, and it's not great.
It's funny, I just am not...
It's not as good as it was. Yeah, he was better with the one guy.
I actually really understand. I definitely get what you're saying. I need to pay more attention the next couple of weeks to what you're saying. And because it's been sort of seamless and fine. It's there. But when I think about the show right now, like I can recall things Corey Graves said. I can recall moments where I thought, oh, that was really good what Cole just said there. That was, you know, a talking point in the match, you know, something about Escobar shooting someone a look or reacting a certain way or this emotional reaction. Like, you know, Cole knows, because unlike in AEW, like the announcers, you know, Cole does puts a bunch of time in before the show, knows what the idea, what the talking points are for the matches, has them ready to go, and enhances the matches with the key turning points in matches and really emphasizes them so they stand out. I can think about those things. I can't think of much Pat, what's his name? Now I forgot
Kevin
his name.
Patrick.
Nick Patrick in my head. I'm like, that's not it. Yeah. Kevin Patrick. I can't think of his name, much that he contributed. So I just need to pay more attention.
I do know Progressive has home, auto, and RV insurance. Right.
read really well.
So, yeah. So, but the fact that he's not just stepping on things and tripping up, you know, the good things that, that Corey and Michael are doing is, again, it's, it goes to my point. There's an absence of negatives with him. He's affable and he's not getting in the way. He's not trying to, you know, put himself out there in a way that just gets in the way of things. So I do still, I stand by that he's a, that they see him as a project with promise, but you know, you're not wrong. I don't think that he's, Corey was already a strong personality who covered, you know, who's already kind of a play-by-play slash color guy. He doesn't really fit the strict color guy thing. He's very, takes a leadership role and doesn't suffer fools well, and that's been a challenge for him with some of the people he's been paired with. So, but you know, he doesn't give Patrick a real hard, much of a hard time either these days. Like, I think that's more a sign of respect, because there's times where Corey's just disgusted with people he's working with. And I don't sense that with Kevin Patrick and him at this point. I think out of habit, he sort of gave Kevin Patrick a hard time to initiate him a little bit. And, you know, but now I don't think he does, because I think he just thinks, oh, he's a good guy, he's trying, and Kevin Patrick isn't saying dumb things anymore, and that, all that comes together. So, yeah, it's just I'll pay a little more attention, because it hasn't been something that stood out as negative. But like you're saying, what's he even doing now? What's he contributing?
Yeah.
All right, let's just wrap up with an email from Azan, because he's got a point or two we haven't brought up. Number one, he goes, hey, Wade and Travis, although everyone's focus is on Jimmy, Paul, and Roman during this inning of the Bloodline story, can we also appreciate Solis Coe's work throughout this whole episode? He's been so impactful with few words during the Bloodline saga. So we checked that box early, Azan. I don't really know that I got anything more to add, but, you know, you're with us on that, especially me. Two, Pretty Deadly is bringing the right type of energy to their skits. I could see these skits making them into a top babyface to feud, team to feud with Austin and Grayson, maybe win the belts from Judgment Day. Yeah, so Travis, I want to know, what do you think of what they're doing with Pretty Deadly and the miracle of standing up from the wheelchair, practicing chair shots from a wheelchair position, the drama, the music. Is this working for you, what they did this week? And I think it was last week they also did the big video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I like it. I like them. I like this. I hope they're not a babyface team anytime soon. I'd like to get, I think they have a full, and seriously, like if they feel that that's where it's going and they need to do things to immediately, whatever the crowd's right. starting yeah. to like, yeah. stop doing it, you know.
Yep, I agree.
At least for a while. So, no, yeah, they shouldn't be the ones to, you know, take the titles off Judgment Day or anything like that. Unless Judgment Day are still champions a year from now. But, yeah, no, I like it. I like the stuff. Yeah, I like the tone. It's fun stuff. I liked it last week with the nurse or the doctor or whatever. It's just like, yep. Man, it's your shoulder. Like, yeah. Why are you grabbing your knee or your ankle or whatever?
Yep. And then, yeah, so they're hamming it up. They're self-aware. It's entertaining. But you're right. It could be too entertaining, and people are going to pop for them. And that doesn't mean turn a face. That means steer their characters a different way. Commit to them being for, you know, 9 to 18 months, you know, heels, and then reevaluate. But don't
yeah.
give in.
When Armando Alejandro Estrada was getting his, you know, my name is Armando, when that was getting like, you know what, you're getting babyface reactions. They didn't go, oh, I guess Umaga's a heel or a babyface now. They just had him stop doing the crowd interaction stuff.
Absolutely. Azan also says, as I was listening to the fix this afternoon, Todd Martin brought up the possibility that Jade might not yet have all the tools in WWE. What's your biggest fear or worry for Jade? So, yeah, I mean, that they bring her up too soon. She starts screwing up moves. Her timing isn't there. Opponents clearly get frustrated with her. Management feels they made too big of a deal out of her. So then, you know, the fans turn on her because they think she's the chosen one, kind of the Roman babyface thing, pushing him too hard, Cena pushing him too hard. And it's an unexpected crowd reaction that's more go away or you're not ready yet. And they start chanting, you're not ready yet. She gets flustered and the whole thing blows up. That'd be the biggest fear. I'm not saying I think that's likely, but I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, and I think they need to be cognizant of that. Travis, what do you think of that? Is there a different scenario that you would be worried about?
I think she's, because of the environment and because of the structured way that WWE does things opposed to AEW, this is the perfect place for her if she's not necessarily, if she does have deficiencies, they're going to cover them up and do it in a way that you're not thinking about it.
Right.
But she's a better wrestler.
Or they try, but she still isn't in the right spot at the right time four times in a match. They're showing light on moves. She's selling moves that don't connect. She's hitting moves that don't come close. I mean, that maybe they don't know how green she is. And you know, I assume if they're giving this much time to her, they have a few people in behind the scenes who have watched everything she's done in AEW. And they're not just enamored with her look and power. They know what they're getting. I mean, they've got to know what they're getting. And if that's the case, then what you said will be fine. Then they're confident that she'll progress. They can train her and they can, you know, work through any greenness that's still there. They're not going to just be naive to it and then be like shell-shocked when she's out there and it's a disaster.
Yeah, they're going to meticulously put her matches together. And I mean, these are the same folks that, you know, produce, you know, great Khali matches. And the like over the last, you know, 50 years. Think of, you know, the one with the stupid bodysuit and stuff. You know, I mean, they know how to produce matches. They've got people, producers that are going to work with her and know how to, you know, her strengths and weaknesses, know how to enhance her strengths and hide her weaknesses. I don't think... they're not just going to throw her out there and go, yeah, you go, you know, go out there and give us a solid 7 and then that's it and leave her, hang her out to dry. And because it's just too regimented and too professional to do that. It's too much on the line for anything less than them not knowing what she's capable of. And they're not going to send her out there until they're confident she can, you know, hit on all fronts.
Travis, anything else you want to bring up from SmackDown?
No, it was a good show start to finish. I was thoroughly entertained, some good wrestling, some good personality stuff. I don't think there was a standout promo. I guess Heyman was good, and as always, and Jimmy was good too. But, yeah, it's a good show. I enjoyed it.
Well, Corey, my producer, is back because – since SmackDown started, Radican Worldwide is up.
East Coast Chance is up.
I'm building to that.
Oh, sorry.
Stepping on me. The Radican Worldwide is up with Headlock creator Mike Kingston, VIP exclusive. PW Torch Daily Cast, Wrestling Coast to Coast is up with a review of ETU Nostalgia, Ultra, including the Killionaires Club against Wasted Youth and more. We got Pro Wrestling Then and Now, looking at Fall Brawl 98 and SummerSlam 98. We got Alan Forel back with... Macho Man Randy Savage over about 2.5 hours on Macho Man. And last but not least, the East Coast Cast VIP after show. Is it even an after show?
It's not an after show.
We got to change that headline, boilerplate headline. The VIP East Coast Cast is back. You and Rich Fan talking about the WWE-UFC merger, TKO. Will AEW aim to sign any of the release stars? Some Jade Cargill talk. And some book talk and more, an hour and a half of you and Rich. So if you're not VIP, that's a sample of what you could be listening to this weekend. Those 5 shows all posted in the last couple hours here. Also the latest PW Torch VIP podcast vault, jumping back to the Waykeller hotline with insider details on when Spike TV had to censor WWE during the last live airing of Raw ever on Spike before they moved, and they had to It was crazy. It was wild. And then also some backstage news on TNA's first Spike TV taping. It was 18 years ago this week when there was a brewing, you know, TNA is going to be on a network that Raw's been on, and this is going to be great for them. And we got it's a big boost for them. And so we're covering that in we have our 18 years ago shows that we put up throughout the week where you can just kind of relive our coverage of wrestling history from 2005, excuse me.
Ultimate Fighter lead-in. That was such an opportunity.
Yeah, so it's I mean, if you're a student of wrestling history or you lived through that era but weren't a Torch subscriber, you just listen to those shows, you want to listen again because it's been 18 years, it's cool hearing some of the same voices, mine in particular most of the time, reviewing and giving backstage information and analyzing those big stories. So lots of cool stuff up. That's the sixth podcast that's gone up via the exclusive well, the daily cast is free for everyone, but the ad-free version is up for everybody. So anyway, lots of cool stuff to listen to. And but, you know, start a course if you've enjoyed Travis tonight with the East Coast cast. Travis, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I had a good time. Thanks.
Yeah, this was fun.
Thanks for the conversation and the invite, and I can't wait to be back.
Cool. We'll do it soon.